Hey, everyone. This is another Campfire Conversation. I have Jeff with me as a co-host, and tonight we're going to be talking with Vern Hinman. And actually, I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Vern, but
That's close enough.
And Vern had a really interesting experience recently where he was able to go to Cambodia, but he just wants to talk a little bit about the preparation, how God did some things in the preparation, and then what happened on the trip. And Vern, I'm just going to hand it off to you and just ask you, what happened? How did this all come about?
Well, the story starts, the story starts in 1985. Family kind of deal. This is a family trip. What happened, the Killing Fields, everybody's aware of what happened with the Killing Fields in Cambodia. And people made their way out of Cambodia into Thailand, and they ended up in refugee camps.
Yeah.
So they're in these refugee camps, and there's this brilliant guy out of California who goes to the refugee camps, lives with them, converts them to Christianity, and develops a seminary in the refugee camp. So when these guys get out of the refugee camps, they go everywhere in the world. I know one of the guys that was in a camp that's in Australia that I talked to, and Sok M and Savi M, which are our friends, came out of this camp, and we lived in Canada at the time, and Canada had a really open immigration policy for people coming out of Cambodia at that time. So they were coming as pastors to Canada. So you got a time shift for a second. I mean, place shift for a second. There's my father. He's a pastor in Hamilton, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. And he doesn't speak Khmer, K-H-M-E-R, their language. He doesn't speak that, but there's all these refugee folks that are coming to the church. So he gives them a service afterwards. Like, you can have the church, just do what you will with it. We don't speak Khmer, but you can have our sanctuary and have your service too. So they do that for a time. And on a Tuesday night, my father's church and the Khmer church combine start praying for a pastor. And so Sok M is coming from Thailand, doesn't know, I mean, these people have never met. He lands in Pearson International Airport in Toronto, and he's going to Edmonton, Alberta, which is like Denver to Canada. It's way over west. So he lands in Toronto, and he hears this overhead announcement: everybody going to Hamilton, get on the bus. Hamilton, Edmonton sounds the same to him. He gets on the bus. He's like 3,000 miles from where he's supposed to be, right? He ends up in this Cambodian refugee hotel in Hamilton, Ontario that night. The very next day, this dude comes to my dad and he goes, "A pastor showed up." And my dad's like, "Sure he did." Like Paul banging on the door, right? So he goes down to this refugee hotel, and there's this dude with a suitcase full of Khmer Bibles and songbooks. He's a pastor the very freaking next day. And so he stays for a decade. He called Edmonton and said, "Hey, we're not coming."
He stays for a decade. I thought you said he was going to stay for a week.
No. He just stays. He realizes, sees God in it, and he just doesn't leave. And my, family, friends, their kids, their kids stayed with my family. Well, I was going to college, and I lived in Texas. These kids actually lived with my parents for a while. Our families have been really close. So, fast forward to the early 90s, Cambodia as a country becomes open again. Cambodia, to end the Killing Fields, Cambodia was invaded by Vietnam. And eventually the country opened again. People could visit. So he goes back for the very first time, and he accidentally uses a visit, and he accidentally planted three churches. He just showed up, started talking about, because what had happened is from a religious standpoint, the folks there believe that it's karma, that what happened to them.
Yeah.
So what had happened to them, this destruction of them and their country, had occurred because they had done something so horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go there with grace and say, no, God loves you, you're beloved of God. And That's what happened to you, but that's not who you are. You do that there, and they're like, okay, I need to hear more about that. And they want, and it's amazing what happens. Mm. The context there for Christ is amazing. So he realized, I planted three churches in my hometown by accident. And he realized, we got to go, we got to do what this guy did for us. We got to create a seminary. So immediately he starts planning for that. My family starts planning with him to create this seminary, and it exists. We worked on it through the 90s, and in the early 2000s, they created Tahas Seminary, T-A-H-A-S.org, Tahas Seminary. So you have this seminary, these people come in, pastors there, I mean, we're visiting Pastor Will there. People come to Christ, and within 2 years, are the pastor. They're less than 2 years, they're the pastor. They have a movement of Christ in the neighborhood. And they have a church. They pick the smartest guy, and he's the pastor. And that happens in weeks. And then within 2 years, they send this guy in for education into Tahas. It's non-denominational. Any denomination can do it. They have Reformed folks hanging out with Pentecostal folks. It just doesn't matter.
Sounds like heaven to me.
Dude, it is bad.
Reformed
and
Pentecostal are hanging out together. We got something going
and
right.
Loving each other, man. It's just beautiful. And so... so that's happening. So the problem is that it's not support. So they've been supported by a couple of people. Here's this other weird thing. So I'm in the meantime, I moved to Pennsylvania. I'm a long ways away from any place I know. I moved here, long story, but I moved here, don't know anybody. I'm just in the middle of nowhere. I go to a West Shore E3, Randy Shelley. I go to his men's group. Some of the guys know him. I went to this men's retreat about 10 years ago. And I sit down to talk to one of the pastors at his church. And this guy goes, yeah, I got this friend in Cambodia. His name's Saki. I might go and teach for him at this Cambodian seminary. And I'm like, you'd be kidding me. You know, I've known this guy for 30 years. And so, you know, their biggest other supporter is 5 miles from me in Pennsylvania.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Incredible.
Yeah. So anyhow, they go to this huge church and... so Sakim comes over here occasionally, and they try to do fundraising. And so he comes to a church, and he goes, would you throw some money into my big sucking hole of need? And people are like, well, 500 seems like a lot. Could I give you 500? That'll probably work a lot in Cambodia. And truly, 500 bucks in Cambodia is huge. But it isn't working, and they're not supporting themselves. So over the last year, I'm like, Sak, here's what we got to do. Give me a – they don't even have a budget, right? So give me a budget, and then make sure everybody actually get a paycheck out of this budget. Give me a budget, and we'll work with you. Make this budget, add up everything it costs you to do in a year, and divide it by the number of students you get in a year, and we'll call it tuition. And if we do that, I can go to churches here, and I can say, hey, when you sponsor the tuition for a pastor – you sponsor a village for Christ, and they become self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And that costs $3,000. Could you do that? So the same church that would have given them $500 gladly and generously
right.
will give them $3,000 gladly and generously. So that was one thing. So that was what I – so the idea of this trip for Zach and I, my oldest boy, the idea of the trip was to go over there and – tell the stories from beginning to end of a pastor and his village a bunch of times. And the best time to go is when they're just finishing a module because they actually preach. They have their churches. They come in for these modules. And what do you know, Sock didn't have somebody to teach this module. So my mom and dad are going over to teach this module this time. And I'm like, clearly, we got to go. I mean, I just felt God is saying, just go. Just go. Well, I mean, my year
of salary. So you've gone from Toronto to Texas to Pennsylvania, and now you decided to make a detour and go to Cambodia.
Right. So I'm going to Cambodia. Now my yearly salary is about $5,000. That you know, I'm a big earner here. I'm doing this stuff, and it's not financially rewarding. It's just really rewarding in these other ways. So I don't have any money. So I'm going to Cambodia. The trip is the plane tickets are a couple of grand a piece, and I'm going with Zach, and we have no resources.
And how old is Zach now, by the way?
Zach's 21.
Okay.
And Zach,
you're making a decision to do this with actually zero money.
Zero money, no way forward. And Zach has got this is a really cool.
Now, let me ask you: are you worried about this? Are you anxious? Are you concerned? I mean, what's going on in your heart?
No, it's happened so many times. It's happened so many times. God told me, put my kingdom first, and I will take care of the. When I came to the gathering, I came with no money. When I went to Pablo's last year, I left with $20 in my pocket, and I came back with $20 in my pocket. When I see $20 in my pocket, I mean, and the checking account's empty. So I'm going over, and we're a month and a half out, and we have
when
no
you see
resources.
$20 in your pocket, you're saying it's time to take a trip.
That is my. I'm talking. That is the inheritance my children will enjoy if I die in a plane crash, and they can buy the 20. So
in my pocket, there's a plane ticket. Okay, go ahead.
That's the deal, man. So I know I'm supposed to do this, and you know, Zach's in this cool place with his faith, and he's gonna come with me. You know, and we really needed time together. And we had gone through, you know, we'd actually done an epic trip, him and I, and saw a bunch of people, some of the people on this call maybe, last fall. And this is like the biggest epic trip ever. And he's going to go with his grandparents. So there's three generations of my family showing up in this context that we've been leaning into for 30 years.
Mm.
And that's kind of the premise of this trip. So we got to get shots. We got to get everything. And here's the thing. Whenever God does a movement in my life, it's never about just me. Mm. So I'll give you a really quick vignette of what that looked like. So I tried for a month and a half to get the shots for this trip. And anybody who's traveled internationally, the shots are the biggest. It's a scam, man. They know you're traveling, and so they're like, you got to go to our travel clinic, which, by the way, charges $50 for every shot, just for a setup fee. It's all cash, by the way. Insurance doesn't cover any of it, just so you know. And actually, it does. But it's just this big scam that's going to cost $1,200. And not only is it going to cost $1,200, I'm having a hard time getting it done. So it's a week and a half before we're going to leave, and I still don't have the shots are going to cost us $1,200, and I can't get them. And by the way, I am so sick. I was so sick just before we left. I've never been that sick in my life before. I had a respiratory thing, and I have never actually. I was afraid for myself. I've never been afraid. I've never been sick and been afraid before. And I was afraid for about 2 weeks. It was really. My wife is the clinical head of a trauma unit, and she was scared. And I was. And I wasn't going to tell them. So I'm going in for these shots. I'm like, I'm trying not to cough, because I don't want them telling me I'm not going, because I'm going. And so I call up this dentist friend of mine. I know God wants me to call him, and I don't know why. And he's a retired guy. He's a new Christian. He's an atheist all his life. He's about 80 years old. I call him, and I say, Tom, I got a problem. I they want about $1,200 for these shots. I don't have any money, and I need some help. And she goes, and he and I have been working on some pretty tough cases over the last couple of years. He goes, well, you know, I got to tell you, it takes a lot of courage to ask for money, and I really respect you doing that. And I don't know, maybe I'll talk to my wife. Maybe. And I said, Tom, dude, I'm not sure that I'm supposed to ask you for money, but I know I have to ask you for something. What if it's not money? Can we just talk about this for a few minutes? So we shifted off money for a bit, and he goes, well, you know, I went to Holy Spirit Hospital when I went to Haiti last year. I said, that's the answer. I'll call you back. So I call, because I hadn't thought of calling them. I call them, hook up with this girl he hooked me up with, and she goes, okay, dude, we don't have a doctor in today, and if you don't get it today, you don't get it. But she goes, you go to your GP, you have him write these three scripts out with these specific words on them, and if you can bring me those scripts, I can... Then I'm just fulfilling the scripts. We don't need a doctor. I'm a nurse. I can do it. So I go to my GP. They were really uncomfortable. They wrote the scripts. We got her done. Cost $200. At the end, Tom actually paid the $200. So it actually was about money. But he was, what Tom needed to hear, what the part of that Tom needed to see, God did this movement in Tom, which is, Tom needed to have a front row seat to somebody standing up against something. He always thinks money's going to do it, and money didn't do it this time. It was something different. God put him in the core of moving this thing forward. Without him, I wouldn't have, Zach and I wouldn't have been able to go. And he was right in the middle of it, and he thought it was going to be a money deal, and it really wasn't a money deal primarily. It was mostly God using him in directing our paths for just a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's the, miracle after miracle after miracle. So in the middle of this, I'm just about a week out before we got the shots. And I have chosen to live my life so that I lean into people that I think are making massive ripples. If I have some skills that I use, and if I see somebody that needs what I do and can't pay for it, I spent a lot of time making a lot of money, and now at this different mission. So Gary is one of those guys. When Gary was starting out, I knew he wasn't awash with cash. I knew he wasn't poor, but he wasn't awash with cash. And the very first time I went to a calling seminar, his technology sucked so bad. It was just a lot of work, and he had all of these DVDs. It was a mess. And so I leaned in with him for a year or two and, got new computers, new way of doing it, and kind of normalized how he did it. We leaned in for a long time. So one of the things I do with Gary is when he has a new clip, he calls me, and that's one of the things I do on an ongoing basis. I don't hardly do anything for him anymore, but on an ongoing basis, I'll do these clips. So the week before he left, he had called me. He didn't know about the trip. He called me, and we were working on some clips for him. And he goes, well, what's going on with you? So I just told him what I just told you. And he was just blown away, and he goes, well, you need to post that up on Basecamp. I'm like, dude, I don't feel like I need to be fishing in Milwaukee. And he goes, what are you talking about? Just put it up there.
Yeah.
So I put it up there, and Basecamp, just a bunch of guys in Basecamp, out of just this incredible generosity, gave us the last $2,500, and we bought everything we needed, just about everything.
The last $2,500. We're talking about real money.
$2,500 in 24 hours.
Wow.
And it was, that was Basecamp, man. They just unloaded on us. So part of this, as I was getting ready, I know Zach's coming with me, and Zach sees me struggle with poverty, and I'm like, to God, I don't feel like I need to beg in front of my son to get this trip done. And that's what God did. God says, I'm going to unplug the jug here for you. I'm going to make sure that not only it gets done, but I'm going to do it through some of your friends, and I'm going to do it in a way that we can both admit it was me doing it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And so we got everything. So the whole trip cost us probably about $8,000. $9,000. We actually brought a quad rotor GPS position drone, a video drone, so we could take, because every jungle looks exactly the same. It looks like a leaf about a quarter of an inch from your face. And so we wanted perspective, so we used the drone. We really wanted to go to Angkor Wat.
When you say a drone, are you talking like a helicopter?
Yeah, four rotor helicopter.
You've got something that flies around with a video camera.
With GPS. It positions GPS-wise, yes.
And it flies around and it looks down and you can control it?
1,000 feet up.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty cool. We wanted to use it at Angkor Wat, but we didn't end up using it there, but we did use it in the jungle. We used it a little less than I wanted to, but we did use it in the jungle, and it does give some kind of a perspective of what we're dealing with. So that's kind of the backdrop of this trip. In the middle of the road of preparing for this trip is Basecamp and a huge amount of generosity. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we'd have made it without it. Mm-hmm. It's over a quarter of the funding for the trip came from 24 hours on Basecamp.
So let me ask you a question. If someone were to ask you 10 years from now or tonight, what was God saying to you about this whole trip? What would you
say? Yeah, so that's the biggie right there. Dude, so this is what God said. He said, you're struggling And you're always going to struggle till you tell the story. You got to shut up and sit down and write. And so when I came back, I have this thing called HeartForge, and it's good. And what I do is miraculous. God, through, we create context, and the Holy Spirit changes people. In this 30 to 60-year-old guys, it happens in 90 days. Their wives fall back in love with them. It's absolutely crazy what happened. And we're struggling. We're really, really, really successful, but what happens, the way we do it, makes the fee-for-service funding model not work. And God's saying, so you're going to love this. So back a couple, about 5 years ago, I have a friend who's named Leonard Sweet. He's a pretty famous dude. And he and I wrote a book together, and the book is called Nudge. And it's a very successful book. I did these brain dumps for him, so he would give me the framework of his chapter, and I would do this massive brain dump for him. And he would send it on to his editor, and it would just go into this big hole. And we had this wonderful time doing it together, but I never heard anything about the book. And so I had gone for a reason out to Colorado Springs, and I stayed with Craig McConnell, and I said, dude, you have to do your writing. This writing is the best I've ever, you know, it's amazing writing. So I introduced him to this editor dude that we had worked with, who, by the way, is the same editor that did Gary's book. His name's John Blaze. This guy's amazing.
No kidding.
He's a poet. John Blaze is amazing. He's been on our call, you know.
Yeah.
He's been a friend of mine for a long time. So I called him up to make this appointment for coffee, and he goes, oh, by the way, Len's book's come out. Do you want a copy? Why? I thought he dropped the project. I thought he was humoring me. I didn't hear anything about the project. And I certainly didn't know John Blaze was the editor. But he knew I had done it because he read all my stuff and edited it. And so he gives me a copy. I called up Len. I'm like, dude, I got a copy of the book. And he goes, I don't. So anyhow, it's a great book. So anyhow, there's this John Blaze guy who's been, we've been friends for a long time. We've worked on stuff together before, pretty successful stuff together before, although it was not mine. And part of my story is there's a lot of ungrace in our story. It's a really tough story. And I don't know how to do that. I'm too close to it. I don't know how to handle it. How do you tell? So I just don't know how to do that. It's just this massive story that's beautiful and just as beautiful and just as ugly as I am. And I don't know how to fix that.
Oh, I love it, Vern.
Well, I mean, you have to get this context. When we're in Cambodia, there are people running down the street with cameras taking pictures of me because they've never seen anybody so big and so ugly.
Yeah, Sasquatch goes to Cambodia.
Dude,
right?
I'm serious. They're running down the street with cameras taking pictures.
Okay, tell us, get on a plane with Zach. Could
you imagine if you and Zach had your motorcycles, what kind of crowds you could get?
Oh, my, they would have, yeah, we saw a couple of Harleys there, but it would have been, we'd be dead now, that would be for sure.
So tell us what happens. You get on a plane with Zach, and you finally are making this trip that's really an incredible gift from God.
Oh, yeah, so we're getting on a plane. So if there's a freaking snowstorm happening. We're going, and there's this massive snowstorm coming. It's the biggest snowstorm to hit the New York City. We're flying out of JFK, and there's this massive snowstorm coming. So we got my buddy, the chairman of my board, we got him to take us there a day early, and we're just going to camp out in JFK overnight because we just don't want to not be able to go. And there's so much coming against this trip, we think it's not going to happen. So we get there, and Zach goes, hey, we go to the gate, and Zach has this idea. We go to the gate, and we get an earlier flight. We got to stop over in Hong Kong. So there's Zach and I for a whole day with nothing to do but hang out in Hong Kong all night, all day. It was great. We went everywhere in Hong Kong. We're walking around carrying our carry-on and taking pictures, and we just had this incredible day together in Hong Kong.
Wow.
And so we go from there in. So we land in Cambodia, my parents pick us up at the airport, and we start the trip.
Wow.
But, long story, I didn't finish that. At the end, what God is saying is, I talked to John Blaze, and I said, John just finished writing Brennan Manning's thing. And so I called him, and I said, dude, would you consider writing for me if I could get the money together? would you consider writing my biography? And he didn't say no. He said, send me a proposal.
Yeah.
So I started working on it, and I thought, you know, well, John Blaze, he's probably just humoring me. I got a text from him yesterday, day before yesterday, and he says, whether I write this for you or not, you have to do this. Mm-hmm. And he's just giving me a shot in the arm to say,
yeah,
this is really important.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, well, that's a word from God for you.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Hit the keyboard.
Yes, it is. So John Hard told me the same thing. John Hard told me the same thing. And one of the problems I have is life kind of crushes me here a bit. It's really, I have to be in a really unique environment to write well. And
yeah.
So John Hard said, come down and just hang at my place for a couple of weeks and write.
Mm.
And
yeah.
So I hope to do that. I'm going to call him in the next bit and
he's
and
listening
talk about,
to that, so.
Yeah, yeah, he was right. He was right on when we were at that. He nailed me back then on a couple of things, and he was absolutely right. And that's
yeah.
what I need to do. And I pulled together enough. I'm thinking I might post one. So writing is really hard. That the process of writing is really hard. And
yeah,
but I love it. But here's the deal: I'm writing this timeline. It's mind-numbing boring. You can try it sometime. Write your timeline, your whole life timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You'll go to sleep after about half an hour. It's just mind-numbing.
So what happened to you in Cambodia? So you get there, and what happens? I mean, this is a place you have a connection back going 30 years.
Yeah, so we end up at the school. We're staying at Thach and Saw VM's house, and we're at the school. They're doing their graduation ceremony. So we're meeting these people, and, of course, I don't speak Khmer, and I have to interview them on camera. And so we have this guy there that's doing interpretation, and he's, you know, so he's working on interpretation for us, and it's taking forever. And I'm looking at this as a nightmare editing job. I mean, and we couldn't afford, we needed a $3,000 Mac, which I still need. We needed this Mac. And the problem, so what I didn't see coming is while we're there, we're shooting on these high definition cameras on these really fast SD cards.
Yeah,
and I had hoped to translate that night and have some of the editing done at night. Well, it turns out Zach is spending 4 to 6 hours every night transferring the stuff by USB because that's the only choice we have. We have these older Macs. So we didn't get any editing done. And the idea of doing the editing is we could do some of the translating while we're still there, and that did not happen. So I've got a buttload of that to do now. But we're over there. We're doing this stuff. And I realized in the middle of it, I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work. There's way too much. We're going to have to work smart. We're going to have to work smarter than this. So here's what we do. We write down the questions, and we're interviewing these people on camera, but they're reading the questions. We have no idea what they're saying. So I've got all these people, and I'm connecting with them, and I know that they're answering these questions, and they're laughing, and they're weeping. And they're letting it all out, and I have no idea what they're saying. I still don't know what they said. I have no idea what. I am so excited to find out what I interviewed them about because I have no idea. I know some of those interviews were incredible,
mm-hmm.
but not a clue what happened. And it's going to be a real surprise. I have no idea what's going to happen. I was looking for 5 or 6 interviews,
yeah.
and I believe we got the entire class, pretty close to the entire class. So the idea is go to this seminary, we get these interviews with these folks, and then we're planning this big circle of the country, and we're going to go to their churches and interview them in their churches and go to church with them if we can. So that's what we do. We're going to a jungle church. We go to this church. This guy's been a Christian for less than 2 years. He was a Buddhist monk 2 years ago, and he's been a Christian for less than 2 years. He's now a pastor, and he's planted 3 churches since he became a Christian 2 years ago. Just
what is the country
study.
Like? Just give me a sense of what the country is like. I mean, this is the country of the killing fields. What are they like now?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, let's stop there for a second, because, Vern, can you explain a little bit of that for everyone listening, what happened in the killing fields?
Yeah.
Okay. Really quickly, what happened is in 1970, when we were still in the middle of the Vietnam War, Vietnam is right next to Cambodia. Vietnam wraps around it to the right,
right,
to the east. And so Cambodia, what was happening is there's this thing, something called the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which you guys probably know. It went right through Cambodia. The North Vietnamese were using Cambodia as a route.
Yep.
And they had had a king in Cambodia up to 1970. And in 1970, they overthrew the king, and they had this guy named Lon Nol for 70 to 75, who was the darling of the U.S. The U.S. loved this guy because he wasn't Vietnamese and he wasn't communist. We loved him. He was a dictator, but we loved him. And so at the same time, we got this Lon Nol guy that we really liked. We're in the middle of bombing the country. You can't bomb a country and not piss people off. It's just not possible.
I'm with you on that one.
So we're bombing their country, and their leader is our best friend. So we set up this scenario that makes it possible for this ultra conservative communist, the communist that took over the Khmer Rouge, wanted to be more communist than China. They wanted to be the most communist of any communist that was ever a communist. And so they took over, and they had these lofty goals of what they're going to do, but they emptied the cities, and they had this idea that if you were young, you had hope. If you were young, your mind could be anything. But if you're old and you had connections to the outside, you were contaminated. So they went about this thing. So if you had glasses, you're educated, you're a dead man. If you went to school, you're a dead man. If your parents went to school, you're also dead. Anybody had external connections, if you spoke a different language, dead.
When you say you're a dead man, do you mean they literally killed them?
Not with a bullet.
Oh, yeah.
Bullets were expensive. They would put a plastic bag over your head and suffocate you. They would, and then they had to do something with the bodies. So they just threw the bodies in the rice paddies. And so people were escaping, and they would go through these areas where just littered with bodies everywhere. Just
wow.
Millions of people died.
This is one of the most historically horrific activities in history ever recorded.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. It's beyond our imagination.
And one of the guys, so there's these guys at the top. The guy, Pol Pot, the guy who was the head, he died in 98. But one of the guys survived, and they have a guy that actually did an interview with him. You get a chance to go to YouTube, look up the video series. This guy whose whole family was killed goes and interviews this guy. This guy's in prison. While we were over there, he got his sentence commuted while we were there. This is still going on for them. The guys who did this never were prosecuted until recently. Mm-hmm. They had this – it was horrible what happened to them. So, yeah, it's happening. So my friend Sakyam, we visited a dam. We visited this resort area that had this massive dam about 2 kilometers long, millions of cubic yards of dirt, all built by guys with baskets. And if you died, you became part of the dam. So there's 20,000 people buried in this dam. And my buddy, who we went to visit with, was one of the guys who had to build the dam. Mm-hmm. So we're up there visiting this dam. Now, he wasn't with us at that point. We're visiting the dam that he was a slave on. Mm-hmm. I sent it out as a card. It's a thank you note. Some of you guys got them. I sent it because we're on this beautiful lake where they have these lotus flowers. It's one of the most beautiful places in all of Cambodia. And it's so freaking ugly. I mean, it's beautiful and ugly at the same time.
Yeah,
because you're in these lotus flowers in this beautiful area, and you're looking over this dam that's got 20,000 people buried there.
And it's literally built by the bodies of dead men.
Wow. It is.
The brick and mortar of dead bodies.
Dude, and that is the story of Cambodia. That, the redemption of Cambodia, but it's the Easter story, because that's not the end of the story. That was not the end of the story.
Yeah.
And we're over there telling the end of the story. That's the beauty of Christianity. When Christ was crucified, Satan got the deal he was looking for. He was not expecting the resurrection. He did not see it coming.
Right.
Didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And the evil. So I'm flying on the plane with Zach, and we just lived through. I was actually afraid that I was going to die the month before because I was so sick. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't lay down. I was more sick than I'd ever been in my entire life. Well, on the plane, I looked at Zach and I said, Zach, the blood that has, you know, the wars that have happened are physical wars in this country, but the spiritual war that has occurred and is occurring in this country is epic, and we're flying into the heart of it. We're flying into the epicenter of the resurrection of this country, and Zach got to see that with me. We got to see this beauty growing out of this horrid, horrid, ugly. I mean, coming out of the airport, you see a little poverty, and then you see more poverty. And by the time you've driven 20 miles, and 20 miles over there, let me tell you, you're exhausted in 20 miles. You never reach more than 35 miles an hour. You're dodging ox carts and semis on both coming by you in the opposite direction on both sides. And you're passing, if you open your eyes and you see it, you're passing every 10 yards is a complete other story of abject poverty. You see another scene of poverty. And after about 10 miles of that, you're emotionally and spiritually freaking exhausted.
Yeah.
You're like, there cannot be that much more. There can't be more. And then you go another 10 miles, and there's 10 miles more. The whole country is you can, and it's really weird because when you're there, it's like visiting the end of the world, because you can see that the building that's sitting under these people was at one point, the 1950s or 60s, there, a beautiful building. Somebody put a lot of effort into that building, French colonial stuff. And I took some pictures of these French colonial buildings. They're gorgeous, 100 years old, gorgeous. And they're in a state of ruin. It's like the end of the world happened. Because the end of the world happened. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You're just looking at the end of the world.
Yeah.
And these people are living, post-apocalyptic. And they all have PTSD. The whole freaking country has PTSD. And the men especially, so here's the deal. A lot of these guys are men. They're Christian men. And Christ reinfuses them. So you got these, they are the most, we talk about passivity. I'm working with a dude that's writing a book on passivity out of North Carolina. I don't know if you guys know him, but he's a great guy. But we're talking about male passivity in America, and he's writing a book about him and helping him. And male passivity here and male passivity there on two different scales. It's just amazing. The passivity over there is just crazy. And in the middle of that...
Now, what do you mean by the passivity? You mean they've given up hope?
You can come up to them with a semi and you're going to roll, and they'll lay down real low so the semi will pass over.
Is this their sense of karma, or is this just they've given up hope?
It's beyond giving up hope. It's hopelessness that has a rabbit hole that goes forever. It's hopelessness that is beyond hopelessness. It is okay. So let me give you an example of hope. And I missed getting these pictures. I intended to, and it did not happen. There is a part, we did a little of working with people in sex trade. They call having sex with young boys the chicken farm. And because of the way I look, often people would say, you want a tuk-tuk ride, which is this little kind of thing. And they would lean in and say, I'll take you to the chicken farm.
Huh.
They're offering me to have sex with these 9-year-old kids, 8-year-old kids. And the reality is, so we're over there, and their hopelessness is so severe that there's a part of town you can go in and you can take pictures of people who are selling their children. I'm not talking, I'm going to let you have sex with my 9-year-old. They're selling their 9-year-olds to pedophiles forever. You take this child, he's yours now. Go do with him as I know you will. That's passivity.
Wow. Yeah,
they've lost any kind of
that
hope.
Is total.
Yeah.
So one other, this happened in Vietnam, but this is another story. A friend of mine told me after I came back. He said he was in a military vehicle, a convoy of military vehicles, and they ran over a kid, probably 6 years old, killed him. So the first truck kills a kid, and the kid's body is he's sitting in the back of the truck, and this truck stopped with the kid's body at the trailer hitch right below him, and he's looking at this kid still twitching. The mother comes out, flipping out. And the commander comes back, the commanding officer, he's horrified. He's coming back trying to work with her. And eventually, he peels off a roll of bills about 2.5 inches in diameter and hands it to her. She takes the bills, reaches down, grabs her kid by the ankle, throws him in a ditch, and goes home. That's
wow.
Hopelessness.
Yeah.
That is,
wow.
That is, God hates
wow.
me. I don't care about
yeah.
me. Give me the money. It'll make me feel comfortable. I'll deal with the grief.
Yeah.
Let me go home. That's
yeah.
hopelessness.
Wow.
And we're dropping the gospel into that.
Yeah. Wow.
So, Vern, last comments. Your whole trip, what do you learn from all this?
Well, you learn hope, I'll tell you that. You learn that the gospel can take root in these dark, dark places. What I'm learning is these seeds that God had us planting in this pissant little church in Hamilton, Ontario, which is the end of the world for Christianity. You know, these seeds that got planted in the most unlikely place. In this suburban church that is really self-focused and, you know, but they had it in their hearts to help these people, and they're good people, but they're really tied up with themselves. That I don't mean the whole area, but that church was a really self-focused church. My dad, he got sent to that church. But when I was over there, my dad said this to me. He goes, when they sent me there, I didn't know what they were doing. We're in the Methodist church at the time. I didn't know what they were doing. I didn't want to go there. I had no purpose. You know, I was like, well, why am I here, God? So he went. And 30 years later, 25 years later, he goes, I was there for this. I had no idea. I didn't know that I was there to change the country of Cambodia. I was there to do a job for the Methodist Church at this suburban church that I didn't think meant anything to anybody. And the people there were not mission-oriented people like that. They were good people, but they didn't want to change the world. They just wanted to go to church on Sunday and come home. My dad said, what am I doing here? And then 30 years later, clearly, you see the seed of what's going to happen somewhere else.
Jason Reed from Base Camp is saying, is this stuff actually happening nowadays? So he's sort of referencing all the kind of stuff that you saw, the women who gives up her child for money.
Oh, yeah, that happened. That's happening right now. We visited some people that we know. One of my partners is a counselor, and his sister-in-law and brother-in-law are there. So we visited them, and they're working in getting people out of the sex trade. And so they told us some of those stories. We couldn't take pictures of them for safety reasons, but they told us the stories. This is happening now. What's happening, Cambodia is a very, very – it's easy to take advantage of because they have all these psychological problems, you know, they have problems pushing back. They're passive, and they're living in a context where China – right around the corner is a wealthy superpower, and even Korea is a wealthy superpower. So all of these people are coming from their countries to have sex vacations in Canada because it's beautiful and it's possible, and there's no worry
cheap
about
and
being
possible
prosecuted.
And yeah,
dude,
wow.
No worry about being, you know, you're not going to get prosecuted. So, and what's happening is even right now, what's happening is. This money is coming in from these other Eastern countries, mostly even Germany. Money's coming in from these Eastern countries. And so the price of land in the cities they're having a bubble. You know, it's getting really, really expensive. Cambodians can't afford it anymore because all the foreigners are buying in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in this right now. They're in a new kind of genocide. The old genocide's over. There is rule of law there to some extent. But the old genocide's over and a new one started. And this one is, the old one would kill you dead. This one will just kill your soul really slowly.
Mm. Mm.
This one is more soul killing than the last one.
Yeah.
This one is, we're going to keep your body alive because we'd like to use a couple of parts of it.
Great.
It is bad. And so in the middle of that, you have these people that are standing up to evil. They're like, no, we got a better answer. That does not win. That part right there, what happened to us, and that does not win. That's not the end of the story. There's this resurrection. You think you're dead. You've given up. God is something. God will resurrect you right now. Do you want it? And people are like, yeah, I want it. It's amazing. And it's happening indigenously. It's not like we're sending missionaries there to do it. We are doing that. But we're raising up people within the country to do it for themselves. It's God's movement in Cambodia. It's not our movement in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. We're showing up at ringside, but we're not doing it. We're just willing, but we're not doing it. We're just showing up at ringside. And that's one of the things, you know, Sam, you asked me, what'd you learn? Well, that's one of the things. Again, God's saying, I give you my power. Take my credit card and go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take my resources. Take everything that I have built into you and spend it for 3 weeks. Go do it. So here's one of the things that came. So coming back, here's one of the ideas that I have. And again, I have no power to do this. God has to do it. In Cambodia, even in the middle of the jungle, they got great cell service. Everywhere they got great cell service. You can't get a landline to save your life, but they have great cell service. And so you got a guy who's been a pastor for 2 years. He's been to seminary, but he sits down for the first premarital counseling he's going to do in his tiny little village. You know what that could do. I mean, what's he going to tell these people? He's barely staying married himself. So the idea is we're going to send iPads over. And, you know, in the jungle is really hard on electronics. So we're going to get iPads. We're going to put them in life-proof cases. You can drop these cases from outer space and they'll land and you'll still be able to use the iPad without wings. You can drop it. I mean, they do it on the Internet, so it's got to be true.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So we're going to send them these iPads. And the idea of the iPad is they can have, you know, the very first churches that Sock M created back in the 90s, they built buildings, they're wonderful, and all of the pastors eventually came off the rails, and they are no longer pastors. Here's what happened. When you're over there, and you're the pastor, and you got it together for once, you're the most powerful, you're a rock star in your village. You're better than the mayor. And eventually, you're a rock star. Eventually, your old wife, you know, doesn't quite cut it, and there's this new one that does. And so you leave your wife. So it creates, even the gospel creates power in people, and if they don't handle the power well, they destroy their lives.
Yeah.
So even, I've been given new life. What do you do with the new life? If we don't tend those people and give them peers to work with, if they become rock stars, we got big problems. Bigger problems we used to have. So the idea is we're going to send them these iPads, and every week they can get met. So the iPad can be in a counseling session with them, and somebody can say, hey, I was in that counseling session. Here, you were working on a symptom. You need to go deeper with these people. Do this. And so you mentor them and how to mentor other people. And you connect with them. Hey, how's things for you this week? What's happening? How's your wife? How's your family? How's it going for you? You know, body, soul, and spirit, all three, the incarnation, they all have to be there. And if you blow one of them, you blow all of them.
Yeah.
Final word. What are you going to say?
Wow. I'm thankful for Basecamp. You guys came through for me, and I needed it. And it was about money, you know. And you came through for me in a huge way. And I needed that more than you know. And I needed to know that you had my back, and you had my back. I was going into spiritual darkness, and you prayed for me. And that's beautiful, and I'm really thankful. I'm so thankful to be part of this group, and I'm thankful to be loved by men. Take-home, that's a really big take-home for me.
That's a great take-home.
Very thankful.
Hey, Vern, Jeff, thank you so much. You know,
thank you.
I think the thing that I take home from this is the thing you said, which is you have a set of guys who have your back, and that's what we all need. That's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of gives us hope.
Yeah, definitely.
The guy in Cambodia pastoring in the jungle is no different than me. I need what he needs. I need people who know me and love me and care about me.
Yeah. Okay, hey, I got to get a last word in here, too.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Vern, I live on the block with all these guys who do indigenous missionary operations. So if they're going into Nepal, they're not sending an American into Nepal. They're raising up a Nepali to reach Nepali people, you know.
That's it.
And as the most effective way to bring the gospel is through the very people who live there. And so I love that. But one of the problems they have is what you just described. You know, they'll become rock stars in their communities, and the next thing there's infidelity, you know. Is the thing that follows. And so anyway, it's a really, really interesting study. But, you know, one of the things that really interests me about you telling your story is that when you pulled the trigger to follow God, it wasn't easy. You were sick as a dog before you left, and you had this incredible financial obligation. We talked about that, getting shots, and I think there's this misconception that if it's God's will, it's just going to happen. You know, and it's more about the journey and the fact that you fought your way there and got there. You know, I've just got to say, wow, you know, that's an incredible story, you know. And I want to say one more thing. Okay, and this is my final word. You know, when you did those interviews and now you have all those interviews, but you really don't know what you have, that's a picture of your life, Bern. Your life is epic. And I don't even think you actually know what you have, you know. And you know what I was thinking about with you today is that you're like John the Baptist, you know. This long-haired guy eating locusts and honey and, you know, making way for the Lord.
I think he takes more baths, though. He took more baths than I do. And
here's this guy in prison at one point, and yet he's highly favored by God. His circumstances have nothing to do with he's highly favored by God. And, you know, when we look at your life, we go, wow, you know, it's really epic, your story and where you are, you know. How on $6,000 a year do you get to Israel 1 year and Cambodia the next, you know, without this amazing movement of God, you know.
It's the love of people. You know what? I came to boot camp. I came to the gathering because of the generosity of people at the gathering. If it weren't for them, I would never have made it to that meeting, which I really needed to be at, but I couldn't do it. God moves. God, the love of the people around me, I have never been loved like that before. I never thought it was possible. I lived my whole life not believing I was loved. How could that be? And then this.